This is Audible.
Well Hung. Written by Lauren Blakely. Narrated by Sebastian York. Prologue. Once upon a time, there was a guy, there was a girl, and some crazy shit went down. The end. Just messing with you. I'm a full-service kind of guy, and I'd never skip the good part. When I tell a you'll-never-believe-what-happened kind of story, I'll stamp it with my personal guarantee that you're getting the whole Oreo, from the delicious chocolate wafers to the sweet creme filling. And please, I encourage you to devour it all, every mouth-watering morsel of the tale. Like that one time on the roller coaster, when we learned exactly why some people shriek at the top of their lungs on the downhill. Or the tale of the quickie behind the lucky slot machine, when someone nailed three cherries while I nailed her. Not sure either of those times topped the afternoon with the ladder, though. What? You don't have fantasies involving ladders? You will soon, and you'll never think of the top rung of a ladder the same way again. But in between all of that so insane it should be illegal stuff that I never could have predicted in my wildest imagination, and look, it's lawless up there between my ears, there was some seriously real shit, too. The type of real that fucks your heart with a chainsaw, that damn near rips it out of your chest, that was what happened to me. So now, after nearly 69 days with her, and the irony of that number is most decidedly not lost on me, I'm here, on the steps of the courthouse. She's going up. I'm going down. I reach for her arm, wrap my hand around it. Is this how it ends? My voice barely sounds like my own. Hers is a whisper, too. You tell me. I could tell you I'm a player. I could tell you I've got a big dick, a rock-hard body, and a heart of gold. But you're not here for my resume. Besides, you've heard stories before of the player tamed. You haven't heard this one. Warning, I don't give spoilers, so you'll just need to buckle up and enjoy the ride. The only thing I'll tell you is this. Our ending is one you'll never see coming. Chapter 1. I'm going to let you in on a little secret about guys. When we see a chick we like, we all say she is hot for us. Doesn't matter who the woman is, what her situation might be, or if we even have a clue if it's true or not. We just say it. Like right now. Floyd, the red-headed dude who was 3 days late dropping off the hinges for this swank Upper East Side penthouse, has parked an elbow on the counter and is yammering away. Guess he needs a break from the hard work of missing a deadline. I'm determined to meet it, though, so I keep working, screwing the hinges into the cabinet door for one of my clients. A client who Floyd believes is hot for his sausage. His words, not mine. Wyatt, did you see the way Lila stared at me when I walked in? He says as he grabs his black and green energy drink, pounds it, then swipes his hand over his mouth, leaving a trail of droplets on his red-flecked goatee. I must have missed that moment, I say, and I'm glad that Lila is downstairs in the building's gym right now and can't hear him. I'm telling you, the chicks just line up for me at every job, Floyd says, puffing out his chest. I arch an eyebrow as I twist the screwdriver and give him my best deadpan retort. This line of women, would you say it extends beyond the door and down the hallway of every client's home? He nods, like he buys his own bullshit. Evidently, sarcasm is lost on the hot sausage king. Absolutely. I could have them all day long, one right after the other. That's why we're in this business, right, bro? He holds up a fist for knocking, but my hands are busy, so I just say, for the tail? He nods. Best tail I've ever had. Nothing quite like a hammer in the hand to nab the chickadees. I laugh at this incredible line of baloney. Because tail is exactly why I got into the home construction business. Not. You'd probably never be tired either. You've got constant stamina, I ask, egging him on as I move to the next hinge, spacing it evenly along the back of the door. Oh, yeah. But here's the thing. This is the golden rule of our business, he adds, then presses his finger to his lips. Oh, lucky me. He's going to let me in on his secret. I love rules. Tell me, I say, like an eager acolyte. The golden rule is this. You can bang the clients, but you can't ever screw your assistant. That so? I say in a completely serious voice, as if he's just dispensed wisdom from Mount Olympus. Floyd nods sagely. Trust me. Learn from my mistakes. I lost the best assistant in the universe when I couldn't keep my hands off her fine ass, he says, then sighs wistfully as his gaze drifts to the ceiling. He must be remembering her sweet cheeks. A good assistant is worth her weight in gold, he taps his chest. That's why my new one is a gray-haired granny. That just removes the temptation entirely. I finish screwing the hinges to the door and take the drill from my tool belt. Pointing it at him, I meet his eyes. But consider this. I let my voice trail off, take a pregnant pause, then say, what if I was into silver foxes? His eyes widen and his words come out dry and unsure. You are? Absolutely. I'm an equal opportunity man. I can't resist yanking his chain, so I keep going, giving a big serving of braggart right back at him. They float my boat, and let me tell you, the gilfs are hot for me. Talk about a line of hotties. Retirees as far as the eye can see. I can't keep my hands off them. You know it. Good thing you don't have a gilf manning your phones then, or you'd be royally fucked. Pun intended, right? I set down the drill, rest the door on the counter, and lower my voice. But you know, Floyd, there's another option, I say, and now it's my turn to lean in, lower my voice, and pass on my brilliance. Yeah? He's practically salivating for what he no doubt thinks will be an office sex tip. I straighten to my full height. I'm 6'2", and I tower over him. You could. I keep my tone even and light. For instance, I take a final beat. Keep your dick in your pants at work. The entire penthouse goes silent. Floyd scratches his head. He furrows his brow and says, huh? Apparently my advice is so foreign, I might as well have been speaking Turkish. Anyway, time to go, Floyd. I need to finish this job on time for Lila, who is neither hot for your sausage nor your bologna. I clap him on the back, thank him for the late delivery of hinges, and send him on his way. A few hours later, I've finished my work for the day, just as a peppy Lila arrives home from her gym session, bouncing in her leggings and sneakers. I show her what I worked on this afternoon in her kitchen remodel, and update her on what needs to be done tomorrow as I move into the home stretch of the job. It's really coming together so nicely, she says in her perky way. You do amazing work, and I'm so glad Natalie was able to fit this remodel work in your schedule. I know it was a tight squeeze, but you come so highly recommended, and I had to have the best for my home. I nod and say thank you, then give credit where it's due. Natalie is the wizard of scheduling. She can pretty much make anything work. Good, because I might have another project for you. Let me talk to my husband, Craig, when he gets home tonight from his board meeting, and then we'll set something up.
Sounds like a plan, and I'll see you tomorrow to finish the cabinets. Soon I'm back at our office in the West 50s, dropping off tools and materials, and none other than the mistress of scheduling herself, a.k.a. the woman who turned this ship around, greets me. Hey, Wyatt, Natalie calls out from her desk as I walk in. See, I almost want to call Floyd and tell him that following my advice is easy. I manage it every day. What a miracle.
especially considering I have a whip-smart assistant who's beautiful, clever, fantastic at her job, and has a smile that just slays me. Call me old-fashioned. I'm a sucker for a woman with a great smile, and Natalie, with her bright blue eyes and cheerleader blonde hair, wins at smiling. She's the perfect all-American girl, like an apple pie, and I just want to eat her up. I mean, I don't want that. Fuck, that came out wrong. I totally don't want to eat my assistant, or bang my assistant, or bend my assistant over the desk. See? I've followed my own advice. My dick is safely in my pants. Besides, Natalie's great at her job, and it's just wrong to think of her that way. Not to mention dangerous. Last time I canoodled with someone I worked with, my business could have tanked. That experience taught me a lesson I should have learned a long time ago. Don't mix business with pleasure. You'll get a nasty cocktail with a bitter aftertaste. So even though Natalie has the prettiest face I've seen in ages, and the most generous heart, topped by a complete goofball side, and even though I once thought she wanted me, I can't go there with her. I keep it all fun and games when she flashes me that killer smile and asks, "How's the Mayweather job coming along?" I gesture from my torso all the way down to my legs, then sniff the air for effect. "Great, but do you have anything to get the scent of douche off me?" She points to the shelves on the far wall of our office and deadpans, "Top shelf, left side. I got a new anti-asshole spray last week, but it sometimes takes a few pumps to really work. So work it good, 'kay?" I give her a thumbs up, pretend to grab a can of aerosol and douse myself with it, then put it back. There, all better. I grab the ratty, mustard-colored chair across from her desk and sink down in it. Clients don't come here. The office is just for us, so we can skimp on furniture. She twirls the pin in her hand. "So who caused the contamination today? Was it Floyd or Kevin, the oily electrician you tried to put a chokehold on?" Oily Kevin needed the chokehold. Agree or disagree? She nods. "Completely agree. There's so much agreement in me, I can't imagine how much more I could possibly agree." "The chokehold was 100% certifiably necessary," I add, since Kevin had hit on her when he stopped by a few weeks ago. "Here's the thing. Natalie could drop kick him in the blink of an eye. She could slam him to the ground herself. But that shit he pulled with the leering and lewd comments does not fly with me. I would have done the same if a dude tried to get fresh with my little sister Josie at the bakery where she works." So I dropped a hand on Kevin's shoulder, Vulcan style, and promptly escorted him the fuck out of my office. No one, and I mean no one, gets to put the moves on my employees. "It was Floyd today," I tell her, then give her the safe-for-work version of the story. The one about Floyd's client conquests, not his comments about banging assistants. There's no need to have that hanging out there in the air between us. Can't plant that forbidden idea in her head. That risky, dangerous, dirty, filthy, completely fucking alluring idea. My eyes roam the office briefly, and I catalog all the places that are calling out to be christened. Her desk, her chair, the floor. Just like that, my head is a wild rumpus of inappropriate ideas, exactly what it shouldn't be. It's like horny aliens have invaded my mind. But I'm not Floyd. I can do better. So I picture a vice, jam the images into it, and crush them out of my mind. The dirty images and the horny aliens, too. And then I escorted him out of Lila's home and said, "See you later," I tell her, finishing the story as I drag a hand through my dark brown hair. Like in another lifetime later. "Hmm," she says. "Hmm, that's great," or "Hmm, why did I give one of our suppliers the heave-ho?" "Hmm, as in your story gives me a good idea, something I've wanted to do for a long time." "What's that?" Her eyes sparkle. Hers are a lighter shade than my dark blue. "Want me to find a new hinge supplier?" The idea is beyond perfect. I smack my palm against the edge of her desk, enthusiastically. Yes, and for the record, you're brilliant and beautiful. I cut the last word off so it sounds like a low bass note. Note to self, don't call her beautiful when you're berating other men for hitting on her at work. She's watching me, waiting for me to finish my sentence, and somehow I twist the words into a new compliment as I say, brilliant and bountiful. Bountiful? Seriously, what the hell was that? Maybe she won't notice. No such luck. Bountiful? She asks, skepticism thick in her tone, as it fucking should be. I'm bountiful? I nod, going with it, owning it. Your brain, it's like a cornucopia of ideas. It's a Thanksgiving bounty. It's bountiful, I say, because I've got to sell this cover-up. She squares her shoulders. If you say so, Hammer. And this bountiful brain was two steps ahead today. I already found a new supplier. I called around, talked to some of our colleagues, and got some great recommendations. I already have a new hinge guy lined up. My smile spreads quickly. Damn. You are three steps ahead of me. A good assistant should be. And you're a great one. What do you say we go celebrate 6 months of you making W.H. Carpentry and Construction a much better business than it was before? W.H. stands for my name, Wyatt Hammer. But W.H. also might stand for something else. You'll see. Don't worry. The whole Oreo, remember? I'll give it to you. Chapter 2. She chooses the vegetarian bibimbap, supernova spicy style, at a Korean restaurant off 9th Avenue, not far from the office. Bibimbap, she says, like she's weighing the word. It's challenging to pronounce and usually comes out like bippity-bop, something a fairy godmother from a Disney movie says, but in fact, bibimbap tastes nothing like a Disney movie. Or like a fairy godmother, I add, stretching my neck to the side to work out the kinks in it from today's job. 8 hours on my feet, screwing, pounding, and drilling. Nothing like a hard day's work, but man, I could go for a massage. She shoots me a look. And you know how a fairy godmother tastes? I realize how my comment came out, but I go with it. Like all your dreams come true. You're telling me you've dated fairy godmothers? Maybe I have. I've dated genies then, she says, playing at one-upsmanship as our waitress arrives. Natalie tells her what she wants, and I order the beef bibimbap for myself, so spicy it singes your hair off, then add in an appetizer and some beers. We're here because Natalie loves spicy food. The hotter, the better. In fact, she's challenged me to a few food dares over the last 6 months. Fortunately, I was born with fireproof taste buds and a competitive will of iron, so I usually beat her. But I've got to hand it to the woman. She can down a habanero pepper like no one I've ever seen. Not gonna lie, it was a massive turn-on watching her eat a couple of those bad boys on a burger one night a few weeks ago when we got some grub after work. There's just something about a woman who can handle her spice. That is, it would have been a turn-on if I'd been thinking of her that way. And I hadn't, so I wasn't turned on. Case closed. A minute later, the waitress returns with two beers and I raise a glass to toast Natalie. To 6 months of your magic. You're better than a fairy godmother. To 6 months of solid employment at last, she jokes. Natalie was bouncing around at various odd jobs before I hired her. She'd needed work, and she was blunt about it. In fact, the night she approached me in her job hunt perfectly underscores my point about dudes saying women are hot for us. Because we have no clue if they actually are. We're all fumbling and bumbling around, blind to what women really want. Women are basically the most complicated creatures ever invented, and approximately 20,000 times more complex than the world's smartest computer. At my friend Spencer's wedding last fall to Natalie's sister Charlotte, Natalie made her way over to me with a determined look in her eyes, and I joked to my twin brother Nick. She wants me. Wrong. dead as a doornail wrong. Turned out she was making a beeline for another reason. When we'd chatted the night before, I'd mentioned some of the issues my firm was facing, the main issue being my complete disorganization, and she'd devised a plan for how to improve operations and put my firm in a position to expand and win even bigger jobs. She'd presented it to me over a game of pool at the wedding hotel. Her proposal had been airtight and exactly what I soon realized I needed. I'd hired her 2 weeks later. Now, after half a year together, I can't imagine WH Carpentry and Construction without her running the business side of things. Her savvy frees me up to focus on what I'm good at, building, making, working. She nudges my arm with her elbow. Remember the day I started, and you went to an appointment that was actually on your schedule from a year before? I groan. Don't remind me. She shakes her head in amusement. But I saved you. I called you literally as you arrived at the client's apartment building, about to go in and give an estimate on a kitchen you'd already redone. I nod as the memory flashes before me. Yep, good with tools, bad with appointments. And now you're good with both, she says, her lips curved up in that winning smile of hers. I look away briefly. I can't stare at her smile. It would probably hypnotize me, make me do its bidding. And business couldn't be better, I say. We should be able to expand now the way we first talked about, hire more guys, regular employees, so we're not just relying on day laborers for each job. Exactly. With the new work we have lined up for the summer, we can bring some full-timers on, cover their health benefits, and all that good stuff. She rattles off some of the projects she'd booked. A number of high-end kitchen remodels. Since it's Manhattan, those gigs can net us six figures or more. By the way, I've been meaning to ask, how did you ever get to be so organized? Do you have file folders in your head? Admit it. It's like the container store up there, I say, tapping her noggin. She pretends to pant, her tongue lolling out of her mouth like a dog in summer. Don't get me excited. The container store is my favorite place in the universe, and I'm convinced I could happily live there. So that's the answer? I ask as the waitress arrives with a fire chicken appetizer that's practically curling from the smoke. This one is going to be stomach-scalding. Excellent. Your affection for the store is how you became so organized? Natalie squares her shoulders. Have I mentioned my clothes are hung by color in the closet? That all my books are arranged alphabetically, and that I never once missed a day of school in my life? And your panties are probably arranged by, I slam the brakes on the subject of her lingerie. Shit, where's the fucking filter in my brain? I swear Floyd tampered with my head today. Maybe his hinges were faulty. By color, she answers with a chirpy little sound, like she knows I went there. She knows I slid into a zone where I shouldn't go. But yet, here I am, asking more. And the most popular shade is? An eyebrow rises, and the corner of her lips quirks up. It's like she just slid on the perfect flirty girl face, and now I have one very ready-for-business appendage. Fucking dicks. Sometimes it's unfair that we have these fuckers to do battle with all day, and believe me, it is an epic battle. Man versus hard-on. Man rarely wins. Boners are too powerful. An answer falls from her glossy pink lips. Natalie wears some kind of sparkly pink gloss, not lipstick. Yes, I know what gloss is. I've kissed plenty of women, and I'm not some Neanderthal with a toolbox who doesn't know the difference between gloss and lipstick. One is slick and tastes amazing coming off a girl's lips when I kiss her. The other one is thicker and tastes amazing coming off a girl's lips when I kiss her. White, she says, and the situation south of the border intensifies. I grab a fork and dive into the fire chicken. Maybe that'll be the cure for wood. And now I know where all your business skills come from. Underwear drawer organization. Pink's a popular one, too. And we're talking steel right now. Pink panties on Miss All-American is pretty much a recipe for a Viagra dick, constantly erect. Pink, white, as long as they're color-coded, that's what matters. She gestures to the chicken. Time to blow our brains out. We one-up each other in eating a chicken dish that tastes like a lit match going down your throat, then douse the flames with beer and move on to the main course. At the end of the meal, my phone buzzes twice. Natalie points in the general direction of my pocket. Work text, she says quickly, reminding me she set my phone to a double buzz when messages to the work number route to my personal phone. As Natalie busies herself checking her own phone, I grab mine and open a message from Lila Mayweather.
I've got the go-ahead. Can't wait to discuss the new project with you. Would love to start soonest. When you come by tomorrow, can you bring along Natalie?
I smile. It kind of makes me proud that my clients love her so much. I'm about to show her the text, but she's still busy on her phone tapping away. I can't help but wonder who she's texting. I'm tempted to peek, but I restrain myself. When she stops and puts her phone away, though, I catch a flash of one word. Torture. Interesting. But I'm not keen to play Sherlock tonight, so instead, I show her Lila's text. You're wanted, it seems. She beams.
I wonder what it could be. Do you have any idea?
I shake my head. No clue. But we'll find out tomorrow. Think we can fit this in?
The next job doesn't start for a while. Let's get the details, but I think we can do it.
Pretty sure you deserve a raise, I say. She beams.
I'm really glad I've been able to help you, Wyatt.
Me too, I say, because even though she's a stone-cold fox, even though she's gorgeous in more ways than I can count, and even though if she weren't my assistant, I'd be a persistent motherfucker to get her to go home with me, she's also fucking amazing at what she does. She sets down her napkin, looks at her watch, and shoots me a sad smile.
I should go. I have a class tonight. Only time I could get at the dojo this week.
Totally understand, I say. And when she takes off, I half wonder if she's really going to class, or if some guy was texting her when she was checking out her phone. Maybe hanging out with me was torture? Nah, I'm a barrel of monkeys. Besides, I remind myself, it's not my place to know about her life beyond work. That's exactly why I don't think of her when I head to my apartment later, or when I take a shower, or when I crash into bed and thumb through an article of interesting facts about animals, including that dolphins never enter deep sleep. Their brains are too active. That's one of the nice things about being me. I can turn off my brain. Women are complicated, but the situation with Natalie is simple. I keep my hands to myself. And I swear it's not made more complicated the next morning when Lila presents us with her plan. Chapter 3 Lila Mayweather serves us coffee in delicate china cups with a rose pattern around the edge. For the record, I'm not a delicate cup kind of guy. But when in Rome, seated in a high-back chair in her dining room, Lila wears a tennis skirt and her brown hair swings high in a well-groomed ponytail. Everything about her is impeccable, down to the fact that she offers us cream in one of those specialty thingamajigs with a spout, and then holds up pewter tongs for sugar cubes. I'm all good, I say. I can't remember the last time I drank coffee from anything but a paper cup or a mug with a broken handle. But Lila's home oozes class, and her remodel is one of the fanciest I've ever done. I have a feeling it's going to open a lot more doors for the business. She and Natalie had hit it off from the start, and right now they're discussing Natalie's martial arts skills. Lila drops a hand on Natalie's arm, bare in her short-sleeved white blouse.
I'd love to take one of your classes sometime. I love to try new workouts.
I promise I will make you sweat, Natalie says playfully as she crosses her legs. You can make me sweat. What the fuck? The horny aliens are back, taking over my brain again.
I've been wanting to learn self-defense. How long have you been teaching karate?
Natalie is a high school karate champion. Yeah, like that's not a major turn-on. Not the high school part, the karate. But if I let myself linger on the fact that she knows how to fight, The flag will be flying at full mast all day long. Instead, I think about sugar cubes and rose petals on cups and matching china, because I'm not Floyd. They chat for a few more minutes and I drain the coffee because, prissy cup or not, I'm a coffee whore, and I can pound that delicious substance morning, noon, or night. Lila sets down her mug, folds her hands in her lap, and says,
"The reason I asked you both here today is I have an exciting new project. Craig is investing in some property, a beautiful new building, and I have carte blanche to redo the penthouse any way I see fit."
Glee seems to radiate off the woman as she shares more.
"Naturally, I thought of WH Carpentry and Construction first, and I'd love to see if you'd consider doing the kitchen remodel. I'm simply in love with what you've done here, and I can't imagine letting anyone else put his hands on my appliances."
I can't even try to contain my grin, not just because of the unexpected innuendo, but because the work could help fund the new hires. And the smile just stretches across my face, because this would be the definition of a no-brainer. I'm not really sure why she wanted to set up coffee to ask me to do more work. Of course I'm interested. I like work. I like building. I like happy clients. "It sounds fantastic," I say.
"Where is this lovely new apartment?" Natalie asks. "It's on the 22nd floor. It's absolutely gorgeous, and it has a stunning view."
"Sounds amazing. What do you have in mind for a start date?"
"I thought first I could show it to you so you know what you're working with,"
Lila suggests. I nod. "Definitely. Want to check it out now?" She laughs lightly and shakes her head.
"Oh, no. I'm sorry. I didn't make that clear. You'll need to take my private jet to get there."
I swallow dryly and look at Natalie. She blinks at me. Unspoken words pass between us. I'm pretty sure they are all of the holy shit variety. You don't have to say private jet more than once for me to say, "When do we take off?" So I do. I shrug happily. "When do we go wheels up?"
"Is the end of the week too soon? It's on the strip, the building near the Bellagio."
She brings a hand to her chest. The egg-sized diamond on her finger nearly blinds me as she says contritely,
"Oh my, I should have asked. Would you be willing to work in Las Vegas? I'd be happy to pay you 20% above your New York fees for the inconvenience of working out of town and needing to find the right crew and workers and so on."
I think this woman might be a fairy godmother. "I would be thrilled to check it out, Lila," I say. "I'm sure we can figure out how to make it all possible." Lila flashes me a smile, then tips her forehead to Natalie.
"That's why I thought of both of you. I know Natalie is vital to making all this happen," she says, waving a hand in the direction of the kitchen. "And it seemed to make sense for you to go together."
The last word echoes.
"Together. Together. Together."
No one says a word at first, then the silence spreads, grows heavier, weightier. I remind myself that we've had dinner, just the two of us. What's the harm in traveling together? I clear my throat and meet Natalie's blue-eyed gaze. I swear I see excitement in her eyes. "Natalie, would that work for you, for your schedule at the dojo?" She nods at the speed of light.
"Yes, and once we know the scope of the job, I'll do everything I can to make this fit into Wyatt's work."
Lila nearly bounces in her seat.
"Wonderful! I can even arrange for you to stay in a suite at the Bellagio. Would those accommodations be suitable?"
She's serious. That's the most incredible part of her entire request, that she thinks there's a chance we'd find the Bellagio unsuitable. "Yes, I believe it would suit us just fine," I say in a serious tone. "Natalie, does the Bellagio meet your standards?"
"Considering I'm operating at more of a Motel 6 level, I think the accommodations at the Bellagio would make me break out in cartwheels,"
she says to Lila, who laughs sweetly. Cartwheels. Wouldn't mind seeing Natalie twirling upside down, preferably while wearing a short skirt.
"Do you need a room together or separate?"
Lila asks, her eyes darting back and forth between us. and it's almost as if we're puppies tumbling on top of each other, racing to answer separate in the same firm tone of voice. So there can be no confusion, we both repeat it. Separate. We chat some more, and when Lila excuses herself to make some calls, Natalie's phone dings with a text. As she reads it, her expression falls.
Crap. Hector can't make it in. Says he didn't get enough sleep last night.
Hector is the guy I was counting on to help me with the final details of the cabinet install today.
Fuck,
I say, like it has 10 syllables. I heave a sigh. This is why we need to hire some full-time people. She nods.
We need some accountability, regularity. He says he can be here tomorrow, though.
I shake my head. Won't do. Besides, what if Sleeping Beauty doesn't get enough shut-eye again? She wraps her hand around my forearm.
Let me call around and see if I can round up any other last-minute guys.
Finishing a job on time is always my goal, and I can't let Lila down. Don't worry about it. I'll do it all. I'll just stay late to finish. Natalie shakes her finger at me.
You'll do no such thing. Working too many hours in a row is dangerous. I'll help you.
I give her a look. Appreciate it, but Hector wasn't going to be doing schematics or scheduling. He uses a drill and a circular saw. She arches an eyebrow, then taps her chest.
Wait. After 6 months together, you think I can't operate a circular saw or hammer a nail?
I know you're capable enough to hammer a nail. She cuts me off and holds up 3 fingers.
I can fix a leaky faucet, 2 fingers. I can knock a grown man to the ground with my bare hands,
last finger.
And not only can I inhale habanero peppers, I can screw anything.
My jaw drops. I can't even respond. I can't speak, and I don't think she's aware of the double entendre because she's focused on darting her hands to my waist, and holy fuck, that's a mighty nice spot for them. If she could move them just a bit lower, my fantasies might come true. Fine. I've dreamed of screwing her hard. Like that's a fucking surprise. She unfastens my tool belt, slings it around her waist, tightens the buckle, and proceeds to look hot as fuck. Jeans, white blouse, my worn leather tool belt sitting low on her hips. For the rest of the day, I will be working next to her. Please, please, please let the horny aliens inhabit the planet of another man's mind today. Temptation, thy name is Natalie.
Where'd you learn to play with tools like that? I ask as we work side by side.
She rolls her eyes at me, then sticks out her tongue. It doesn't have the intended effect. She looks cute, just like when girls pull down their pants to moon you as some sort of insult. It's not an insult. It's a win. Not that any girls have done that lately. Come to think of it, no one's mooned me in years. Would be nice if Natalie broke my unmooned streak.
The same place you learned to play with dolls? She tosses back.
Oh, shots fired, I say. As she dips her hand into the tool belt for a screw, she says,
You think just because I'm a woman, I'm not handy?
I scoff. That's the last thing you can pin on me, sweetheart, I say, and then I stop. Sweetheart? I don't usually call her that, but, you know, it fits her. She aligns the screw into the wood, then says,
For your information, I learned from my mom.
Your mom, the surgeon?
Yeah. Funny thing is, surgeons play with tools, too. Scalpels, scissors, even, get this, she pauses, and her eyes glint with wicked playfulness. Drills.
I pretend to shudder. Anyway, I'm impressed. I knew you could do the basics, but you've been keeping the extent of your handywoman skills a secret. Then again, you didn't tell me for months you were a ninja. She laughs.
Not a ninja, just a black belt, 3rd level. And besides, I'm not trying to pretend I'm a master carpenter like you. I can get by, but I can't hammer like Wyatt Hammer. You're a master at hammering, right?
I wiggle my eyebrows. Like I had any other choice for a career. I grab a drill bit from the toolbox on the floor. Anyway, you cool with going to Vegas? She nods.
Absolutely.
I've never been. It sounds like fun, she says, then quickly adds, I mean, not that we're going to sightsee. We have work to do. Hey, I'm sure we can find time to ride the roller coaster or Ferris wheel or whatever you want. Play roulette, see a show. By the way, I meant it the other night when I said you deserve a raise. If this new job comes through, I'm giving you a 10% pay increase. I line up the cabinet door. She's doing the same with the one next to me, when out of the corner of my eye, I see the door start to slip. On a fast track for her face. In an instant, I'm behind her, my hands shooting out on each side of her, catching it before it swings wildly off the hinges. I got it, I say, gripping the cupboard door in place.
Shit, that almost whacked
your head, I say softly. She nods, her hair brushing against my cheek. That feels better than it should. Like, too good.
That would have sucked to have my face flattened by a cupboard, she says, trying to make light of it.
But she takes a deep breath, and her shaky voice gives her away. But you're okay, I say, since now's not the time for jokes.
Thanks to you. You moved fast.
Didn't want anything to happen to you. My chest is sealed to her back. My crotch presses against her rear. My face is in her neck, and as I breathe in, the scent of Natalie floods my brain. I've never been this close to her, and she smells exactly like I'd expect her to. Fresh. Clean. Like sunshine. Like I'm lying in a hammock in the yard, the grass newly cut, and she wanders over as the golden light of late afternoon halos her face. She slips into the hammock. Yanks off her shirt, tugs down my zipper, and we fuck. A lazy, unhurried afternoon screw with this woman who smells like sunshine. I inhale her one last time, and her breath catches. She makes a little sound, a soft, oh, and that sound does something to me. Makes me start thinking, start wondering, start tripping down the dangerous trail of, maybe Natalie's hot for me too. Maybe I'm not the only one nursing some lust. I swear I feel a shudder move through her body like a ripple in a lake. Be careful, I whisper, and I'm not sure if the directive is for her or me.
I will.
No face pancakes on the job, okay? I say, and now I'm the one trying to make light of things. I lower the cupboard door to the counter and back away. She turns around, looks down, sweeps a lock of hair from her forehead. Neither one of us says anything more as we finish. I reason if I can survive a day with her working beside me, I can handle a weekend trip. What could possibly go wrong on a business trip to Vegas? Chapter 4. I'm counting down the days till we leave, but I've got enough to keep me busy. Like seeing my little sister and brother on the way to my volunteer shift at the dog rescue the next morning. It's time to nix Elizabeth Lecter, I tell Josie as I bite into the 7-layer bar she gives me. Josie's green eyes widen, and she slashes her hands through the air.
Does that mean you're done? Like, totally done?
She takes a seat across from me at a lemon-yellow table at Sunshine Bakery. This is our mom's bakery, but Josie pretty much runs it now. I point at the bar. This shit is good, I tell her. She hands one to Nick, my twin brother, and shrugs happily.
I know. I rock at baking.
You might even be better than mom, Nick says out of the corner of his mouth, as if he's whispering. But don't tell her that. Josie mimes zipping her lips, then points to my phone. The Facebook profile of one fake Elizabeth Lecter is on the screen.
You're really ready to get rid of our pretend friend Elizabeth, even considering what she accomplished after Sunday night's episode?
I slash a finger across my throat. Time to kill her off, and all the others, too. Go out on a high note, Nick says, agreeing, as he rips off a chunk of the evidence of Josie's unparalleled talent in the kitchen. It won't ever get better than this. Look at that. I point at the phone. I grip my face and drop my jaw open, like Edward Munch's The Scream. It's like my ex is melting from the pain. Josie reads out loud the response my ex, Katrina, wrote earlier this week on her page.
Is nothing sacred? Does anyone know how much spoilers hurt? Might as well take a knife and rip it through my chest.
Nick mimes wiping tears from his eyes.
Wah, wah, wah.
I lean back in the chair and stretch my legs out in front of me. This might have been our greatest accomplishment ever. I'm quite proud of our factory of fake Facebook profiles, but I've got to hand it to little Miss Elizabeth. She really owned it when it came to her Game of Thrones final episode spoiler. Josie holds up one finger.
But let's not forget our made-up friend Emma Kruger's spoiler. Remember when she posted about the Hold the Door death? Katrina's tears were all over her wall that night.
Josie high-fives me for that one. Only to be topped by Eleanor Bates's epic message that Jon Snow was alive, I add, pride suffusing me at the memory of that greatest hit. But even so, it's time to say goodbye. Our work is done. Josie runs a hand through her pink streaked hair.
Should we embrace a moment of silence before you kill them off?
I affix a serious expression to my face, and the three of us bow our heads. A few seconds later, I look up and delete the profiles that rained sweet revenge on Katrina. Elizabeth Lecter, Eleanor Bates, and Emma Kruger are all made up, plucked from the names of Jane Austen heroines. Josie's nod to her literature degree, then paired with last names of some of the greatest movie villains of all time. Some might wonder why I'd punk Katrina, a seemingly harmless ex-girlfriend, who's also my former website designer, as in, really former. As in, I didn't date her while we were working together, I swear up and down. Sure, I'd thought she was cute, and she'd clearly felt the same about me, since she'd asked me out a couple of times while on the job. But I'd already learned my lesson not to get involved with someone connected to my business, even though the first time it had happened, with my college girlfriend, Roxy, she wasn't even properly connected to my business. She just wanted to be. Anyway, once the website work was done, the login changed for better safe than sorry reasons, thanks to my friend Chase's reminder to change passwords as often as you change underwear, Katrina and I had dated for half a year. Now, allow me to explain how 6 pleasant months of dating could lead to this sort of fallout. Mind you, during those 6 months, no one cheated, and we even enjoyed picnics in the goddamn park. And if there's one thing I'm not, it's a picnic guy. But she liked them, and I went along to make her happy. Alas, I didn't want more from Katrina. And I swear it had nothing to do with the picnic torture, so I'd ended things, amicably, like a nice guy. Then Katrina went full mental nutcase on me and used her web skills to hack my company site and delete all my files. Out of the blue, even after the passwords were changed. Like a total lunatic. Yeah, it was shitty. It cost me business. I'd even had to hire a lawyer to deal with the mess left behind. The problems it caused were among the reasons I'd needed help from someone to get organized again. So I'd hit Katrina, an avowed hater of books and lover of all things Game of Thrones, right where it had hurt her the most. Josie and I had made up fake profiles of women who might potentially be clients for Katrina's web services, friended her on Facebook, and then posted spoilers every Sunday night on Katrina's wall, live and in real time as each episode aired. Our prank only worked because Katrina's been on a job out of the country since the season started, and she can't find an internet stream right away to watch her favorite show in the universe. Boo fucking who. It's pretty much the trolliest trolling ever. And one of the best deserved paybacks, too. I mean, the chick fucked my business with an unlubricated Phillips head screwdriver for no reason, which might, just might, be why I'm a tiny bit cautious of getting involved with anyone work-related. But all good pranks come to an end, and it's time to say goodbye to this one. I close my Facebook app, then I clasp a hand over Josie's. Mom and Dad would be proud you learned from the best, right, bro? I say to Nick, since the two of us are the kings of pranks, and we've passed on some of our top tips to Josie. It really is impressive what we've done with the brains they gave us, Nick says. We use them for good, don't we? Completely. I pop the rest of the 7-layer bar into my mouth, then stand up and brush one hand against the other. We need to head to Little Friends to walk the dogs. Oh, shit, that reminds me. Nick, can you handle the dogs on Friday? I've got to go to Vegas for a gig. He raises an eyebrow. You working in Vegas now? I might be. A client is flying me out. It sounds like an awesome job. Really hoping it comes through. That's great. Good for you, Nick says with a pat on the back. Yeah, it should be a good trip. I'm headed for the light orange door. The bakery is an homage to all things bright and cheery. When Josie says, funny. I turn to face her. What's funny? She shoots me a knowing look. That you didn't mention Natalie is going along. Why is that funny? I don't need to ask how she knows. Josie is Natalie's roommate, and they both live in Natalie's sister's old place. When Charlotte moved out and married Spencer, she rented her old pad to her sister, giving her a break on rent, so Natalie could live in the city and teach night classes at a karate studio here. A few months ago, Josie's lease ran out, so she moved in too. It's not weird for me that my little sister lives with her. I swear it's not weird for me at all.
I just find it odd that you didn't mention you were going with her, Josie remarks.
Nick shakes his head, laughing.
Dude, that's a recipe for trouble if I ever saw one.
You should know, I fire back.
That's why I said it.
I press my palms down against the air, the sign for chill out. It's work, peeps. Josie tightens the knot on her apron, a light blue number with cherries on it.
Either way, Natalie seems excited for the trip and to see Vegas for the first time.
My ears prick.
She does?
Fuck. My voice just rose at the end, like a 9th grader rattling around in puberty. I shrug it off with a casual, cool. My bluff doesn't go unnoticed. Josie raises a knowing eyebrow, but simply says, make sure she sees the sights, okay? I will. Vegas sign, a gondola ride, Bellagio fountains.
What's underneath your zipper?
Nick whispers in my ear, and I elbow the fucker.
Just be a good guy, like you always told me a girl deserves, Josie says as she returns to the counter, and her words tug at something inside me, at my heart's deepest wish,
to be a good guy. Because I wasn't always. But if I am now, it's because of Josie. I fucking love that girl like nobody's business. She points to both of us.
That applies to both of you as a general rule of thumb. I know exactly what the two of you are like. I grew up with you troublemakers, remember?
I salute her and bring my heels together, standing at attention. I'm always a good guy, Josie. Nick and I leave, heading for Little Friend's dog rescue, where we volunteer.
Do you even know how to be a good boy? He asks as we walk up Columbus, the warm spring air surrounding us.
I grab my shades from my t-shirt neckline and drop them over my eyes. Yes, I do the opposite from you.
You are going to be so fucked, he says, shaking his head as he laughs at me.
We sidestep a jogger in neon pink leggings while cabs and cars chug along on the avenue.
You've had it bad for Natalie since Spencer's wedding, remember?
I wave a hand dismissively.
Nah, that's not true.
Dude, you told me she wanted you when she came over to dance with me at the wedding.
She did want me.
My point exactly. You only say that when you want a girl.
I stare up at the blue sky.
Pretty sure I say that all the time. I'm a cocky bastard, right?
I wink, then clap him on the shoulder as we reach the crosswalk.
Relax, cowboy. Even if I once wanted her, I'm a master at self-control.
He scoffs.
Self-control. Words never used before to describe my little brother.
I pretend to laugh. Maybe you don't know me that well.
I think I know you better than anyone.
Then tell me this, oh wise one. How else would I have managed the feat of the century in staying away from her for all these months? I arch a challenging eyebrow at Nick, waiting for him to give it back to me. He pushes his glasses higher and nods slightly.
Fine, fine. You have some self-control.
He shakes his head like he doesn't believe it. But I believe it. I have to. Especially when 3 days later, I get on a private jet with Natalie Rhodes, Temptation Made Flesh, the All-American Black Belt with a tongue of iron fire. As she settles down into a beige leather seat and crosses her legs, she shoots me a smile. That sweet, sexy smile. Fuck. Being a good boy is way overrated. I want to be bad with her. Chapter 5. I could get used to this. The leather seats that recline all the way. The impeccable service, including a 3-course lunch. A quiet ride in the lap of luxury next to Natalie. Lila snoozes in her seat across the aisle. She popped a Xanax. Flying makes her anxious, she'd said, so she's in the land of Nod, a black satin eye mask snug on her face. Can I get you anything else? The flight attendant asks us. I do a double take. For a split second, it registers that she's pretty. She's been serving us the whole flight, but it just hit me. Her looks. Silky red hair, full lips, and warm brown eyes, along with a tight, trim figure. But then, all thoughts of her fall out of my head. And that's not just because it would be rude to hit on the flight attendant on Lila's plane, and it would also be classless to hit on her in front of an employee. But the reality is, I don't really want to get to know her more. I'm kind of interested in talking to Natalie on this flight. Even though we tease each other at the office, and even though we've gone to dinner a few times, we mostly chat about work. There's a lot I don't know about her. The attendant clears our ahi tuna lunch dishes and asks if we'd like to watch a movie. I shift my focus to Natalie, letting her decide. She shakes her head and says, I think I'll read. But she doesn't read. She doesn't break out her Kindle or a paperback. Instead, she nudges me with her elbow and says, I never imagined working for a construction firm meant I'd fly to Vegas like this. I should have tracked you down long ago. I would never have taken on all the crummy jobs I had before. I laugh. Tell me more about your checkered work history. I don't actually know a lot about what she did prior to working for me. Her resume didn't score her the gig. Her gumption did. She arches an eyebrow. Like the time I worked for a phone sex operation? My eyes nearly pop out of my head. Then I school my expression and do my damnedest to act unfazed. Oh, yeah? She nods. It was kind of awesome. We did it all, but we specialized in furries and feet. I do my best to maintain a straight face as sights and sounds of Natalie twirling a phone cord as she purrs huskily about the high heels on her tiny feet flash like a neon billboard before my eyes. I swallow, then manage a dry, really? I'm not sure if I'm turned on or wigged out. Maybe both. Mostly turned on, though. She nods several times. You have no idea how many men have foot fetishes until you do phone sex. They want to hear you walking around in your heels. They like the sound they make on a hard wood, pun intended, floor. Damn, I love puns. I'm motherfucking crazy about them. But I've got no clue how to react to that one. I scrub a hand across my jaw. This is a whole new side to Natalie, and I can't help but picture her strutting across the floor in stilettos. She's already an intoxicating combo of cheerleader looks and tomboy heart. Add in heels, and I'd be a goner. For the record, I'm not a foot fetishist whatsoever, but I bet she'd look sinfully sexy in 4-inch pumps, red ones, with her legs wrapped around my waist as I fuck her against the wall. And furries? I ask, doing my best to stay rooted in the bizarre fetish portion of the convo, not the filthy personal fantasy part. People who wear full fursuit costumes, she explains. I get what that is. I frown in confusion. What I don't get is that furries seem to be more of a real-life thing. She nods exaggeratedly. Oh, it's huge in phone sex. You pretend to be wearing a full fox suit, or sometimes a squirrel outfit. Raccoons were also popular, but mostly a sexy squirrel. That was the favorite. I'm trying. I swear I'm trying. But picturing Natalie whispering dirty words like, rub your furry tail against me as I store nuts in my cheeks doesn't compute.
Min called in, wanting to get it on with a gal in a squirrel suit. She nods.
It's called yiffing. Crazy, huh?
I run a hand through my thick hair, a little wavy today.
A bit, but whatever floats your boat.
She arches an eyebrow.
Admit it, you're shocked.
Nah, I say.